We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Good morning, Dregs. How's everything going with you?
Everything's going well, guys. Good morning.
I want to just carry on our conversation from the last segment before we get on to hockey here, because it does involve, I mean, it's not just Tim Hortons, but I feel like it normally only happens at Tim Hortons. But Marty had a dis or dat, which we didn't get to, so we brought it up a few minutes ago. And when someone pays for your drive-through order, do you need to pay for the person behind you? Yes or no? We've tweeted that out from at the Instigators account, ladies and gentlemen, so you can go and vote on the poll. But what do you think, Dregs? Has that ever happened to you? And have you ever started that? And what do you do if it does?
I would say no, you shouldn't feel obligated to pay for the person behind you. However, there should be an obligation to pay it forward at some point. So, you know, maybe the next time you're visiting Tim Hortons, you go through the drive-thru and you say, hey, and you got to roll the dice too. So this experience happened to me about 6 months or so ago. I go through the drive-thru and I just randomly on occasion will say, look, whatever the guy behind me or the people behind me have, I'll look after. So about 6 months ago, I do this, and the attendant says, yeah, it's $57. I'm like, what?
At who? Where? Where was this?
Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons, like, $57.
Yeah. I mean, what are they at, like 30 breakfast sandwiches? Like,
that's a sales account. They're making a sales call. They're taking that to an office.
Yeah, but that's exactly what it was. She, you know, the server said it's an office order. So there's a bunch of sandwiches, there's coffee, there's waters, there's orange juice, all this stuff. I said, forget it. I'll get them next time.
Yeah. And that's okay to do, right? That's okay to do is say, you know what? I was expecting a $5 order, not a $57 order.
Well,
57
also
is high.
Dregs, you have to assume that the next order is a write-off, right?
Well, you would assume.
Not for you. I'm just saying for that person. I mean, there's no way they're getting that order just for buddies and friends. Okay.
No, anyway, I don't think that they're it's not a cut and ride situation. Let's put it that way. If you feel like you're in a real good mood and you want to pay it forward, by all means. But I see, I also have, and this is going to open up a big can of worms here for a moment. All right. I'm a prairie guy, come from Saskatchewan. Not that all Saskatchewan people think the same way that I do, but I grew up on a farm and we loved our pets. But our dogs, as an example, were farm dogs. They stayed outside. It doesn't matter if it's minus 40, they had a doghouse. You know, you throw some straw in there, they're fine. They're hardy animals. But you'd have a cap on what the vet bill is. So, I mean, and I still to this day have that cap. Like, I love my pets. I've got a beautiful Great Dane. I've got a little Shih Tzu. I've got a cat. I feel like, I think I bumped it a couple of times over the years, but I think I'm at like $5,000.
Did your salary,
for the
did
year,
your, did
for
your
the
pet,
year.
Did your pet cap come in around what? 04, 05?
Yeah, the pet salary cap was introduced in 2004.
Hey, does it good based on Dregger revenue? Does it go up every year? Is it a percentage of Dregger revenue?
No. So, but that's my point is, you know, and it's a bad comparison, but I feel like you should have a cap the Tim Hortons drive through as well. Is it 10? Is it 15? Is it 20? Whatever it is, you got to have a cap.
Yeah. Well, I said before, just shut it down right there. Be like, that's my day, you know, not the person behind me. Instigators, Darren Dregger joining us here, TSN Hockey Insider. Normally Fridays at 11, 30, but kind enough to move to 11 as we can have a little more time with him. So instead of talking drive-through stuff, let's talk some hockey, not just Sabres, Drakes. Big week in the NHL. And I saw yours and Ray Ferraro's thoughts on the Tom Wilson thing, but how does that all play out in your mind? How is there not a suspension in this case?
Well, I mean, the reason there wasn't a suspension is because Paris and the Department of Player Safety don't analyze the sequence as a whole, right? They look at the individual elements of the sequence, and it starts with the $5,000 fine for the punch on Butch Navage. So that was a finable action, and it's now on record, which doesn't help Tom Wilson moving forward. Then they separate and they go, okay, there's cause and effect here. So you fine for the punch. Artemi Panarin gets involved in defending a teammate, Butch Navage, and Tom Wilson fires him off in what is qualified as a takedown, whether you agree with that or not. And then we saw it the next night with Sidney Crosby and Travis Konecny, something similar, although it didn't create nearly as much buzz. It didn't seem to be as violent, I would argue. So the suggestion that I've had thrown at me by a couple of general managers is, if that entire scene is believed to be unacceptable by today's society, and more importantly, by those inside the NHL society, well, then you have to tweak it. And that's up to the general managers and then the board of governors and the competition committee to make those adjustments to the criteria. So look, and I'm not defending George. I feel like if they'd really dug down on this, on the takedown perhaps, even though, has anybody ever been suspended for a takedown? I mean, Sean Thornton got 15 games when he got involved with Brooks Orpik, and Brooks Orpik was stretchered off, right? And because of that lured the big number suspension. If Panarin's head, thank God it didn't, had smashed onto the ice and there's a pool of blood there, we're having a different conversation. The optics alone would have encouraged the Department of Player Safety, the league, to say, we can't have that. We can't have that. And we're going to find a way to suspend. They found a way to suspend Tom Wilson for the Brandon Carlo hit, right?
Yep.
They literally had to search through the book to come up with criteria to suspend them. They did that. So maybe in the bigger mass ugly scene, the NHL has to expand its criteria so Paris doesn't have to go searching for a way to suspend.
So you're telling me that in the Carlo hit, where he got suspended for 7 games, they had to search to try and find a suspension for that hit?
They did.
Then there's a problem with how they're, ciphering through what's a suspension and not. That's a predatorial hit like I've never seen. He hit an unsuspecting player from behind and it connected with his head. Mm-hmm. Like, how much more criteria do you need?
And what was the penalty called? Was it a charge?
It was boarding, I believe. A roughing or boarding, yeah.
And that's what happens is when you dissect the penalty, when the penalty is called. But again, maybe the answer to all of this is you allow the Department of Player Safety to do what they did in that situation and just weigh the bigger picture, right? Instead of dissecting it frame by frame to reach the conclusion. But that's less on Paros and the Department of Player Safety and more on the caretakers of the league to give him broader parameters to do that sort of thing.
Triggs, you have a lot of experience in with the history of the league and those type of events. So I'm going to ask you, because I want to know if I'm way out of left field, if you had to rank from not so bad to, wow, outrageous things that Wilson have done in that sequence. He leans on the back of the head of Buchnevich falling down. He punches him and he takes down Panarin. Which one is at the bottom of the totem pole and which one's at the top?
I mean, Panarin's probably lower for me than the Buchnevich play.
Okay.
Because look, whether we agree or not, Panarin was trying to be a good teammate and he engaged. Now, he's outweighed by, what, 50 pounds? And the strength meter wouldn't even measure between Tomlinson and Artemi Panarin, with all due respect. But Panarin's a high character guy. He engaged. He tried to get in there. And the takedown has been something that I don't think the NHL has cracked down on well enough over the years, just because, again, the danger that's involved in it. But, you know, to intentionally do what he did to Buchnevich, I mean, the only thing shy of a big, big, big suspension, if he had connected to the back or the side of Buchnevich's head and his face has been driven into the ice, and again, there's a serious injury or a significant injury, you know, we're having a completely different conversation. So intentionally to do that, that for me was worse, because we see that takedown and we see players defend all the time. But I'm a little surprised that the league hasn't, they've talked about the takedown. They talk about everything, general managers, when they can meet and they go in their breakout groups and all of that. But it's something that happens all the time, just maybe not as violently as what we saw with Panarin. Well, if it happens all the time and it's considered to be a developing problem, why not address it?
Yeah.
Why not address it? You know,
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger joining us here. He's at Darren Dreger on Twitter, and he's here every Friday. So let me ask you this, Dregs. How do you think the league felt about the next game?
Well, they felt strong enough with their level of concern to have a couple of calls with both clubs, the Capitals and the New York Rangers, and there were a number of people involved from the NHL level, including George Parros, by the way, spoke to the general managers. And I don't think that there were any specific warnings. It was just strongly suggested, look, leave all the nonsense behind. Leave it in Monday. If there's retribution and it crosses a line, then we're going to have no choice but to act accordingly. I don't think that the league expected what they were going to see on Monday. Or on Wednesday, sorry. But you guys know this. I mean, you've been in that environment so many times. You know, the Rangers didn't respond on Monday to what went on, physically speaking. But whether you're a fighter, a physical guy, or an offensive player, doesn't matter, does it? I mean, you're going to have a couple of days to chew on this, to get to a boiling point. And even a non-fighter is going to want to deliver some form of message. And that's exactly what we saw. You know, right off the drop of the puck on Wednesday, six fights in the first period. I mean, optically speaking, it was a bad look for the National Hockey League. It was a bad look. Could it have been avoided with even a one or a two game suspension for Tom Wilson? Probably, but are we ever going to know that? No, we're not ever going to know that. Where the line got crossed was Buchnevich, of course, cross-checking Anthony Mantha in the face. And that was what the league most definitely was hoping wouldn't happen, where it escalated beyond fighting to, you know, a dangerous play. So they couldn't have expected all of it, but they had to expect some of it.
All right. I thought maybe one of the guys would want to chime in. Obviously Sabres, you know, with Don Granato. Marty, are you raising your hand?
No.
Oh, okay. It looks like you're going like this, like you want to speak. I'm sorry. No. Don Granato, you know, taking over for Ralph Kruger, Sabres on a coaching search, but Sabres without Jack Eichel. Do you have any update on his neck situation? I feel like this, like I said to you last week, you know, it's going to be a regular question. I mean, how come it's not talked about more?
Probably out of respect and confidentiality of the circumstance and an individual player's health. You know, in hindsight, maybe it was a mistake by those involved to present that information in the first place, right? And because the club and the players' camp didn't share the direction of treatment that was needed, you know, maybe the Buffalo Sabres said, okay, we got to stop talking about this. Or Jack Eichel said, look, this is my own personal business here. I'm going to manage it accordingly, but I do not want this to be managed in a play-by-play scenario in the media. I'm not going to have that, because the player side of things most definitely has gone dark. And the update, as far as I know, is the same as it was a week ago from the Sabres perspective. And they're just willing to continue to forge forward with ongoing treatment. Now, would it surprise me if there was a media release at some point in the near future that said Jack Eichel had the surgical procedure to remedy the disc issue in his neck. Wouldn't surprise me at all. But if that happens, we're probably going to read about it in a media release and less likely to be reporting on it as inside information, because I think the players lock things down in this case.
How do you think locker cleanout is going to go? Because he hasn't spoken to the media since the injury, because players that are hurt now this year with COVID protocols and all of that, they just don't, you don't get access to them. There's no Zoom for them. So do you think it's going to be heated? Do you think he's going to be forthcoming? How do you think the player himself handles that situation on locker cleanout day?
Well, I'm going to assume that Jack Eichel isn't available. That's going to be my assumption based on injury.
He won't talk?
How is that possible that the captain of this team does not go in and talk and address the entire season?
Good question.
Does he have to?
Well, does he have to?
I guess I'm throwing that question to all of you. Does he have to? Because I mean, I guess
absolutely has to.
Leading up to this, I don't think I ever would have
expected
him to.
Well, no, I would
right
expect
now,
him to.
If he was healthy, yes.
Yeah, I would expect him to. But you're right. You know, if he's not healthy, if he's injured, if he's had the surgery or is about to have the surgery, all of those things. I mean, that would be his way of saying, look, I'm not meeting the media. I'm not obligated to meet the media because I'm captain of the Buffalo Sabres.
He is absolutely obligated to meet the media as the captain of this team. There is no question about it. So that's all hogwash.
I applaud what
you know, whether he does not want to talk about his injury, that's one thing. And that's up to Jack to make that decision. Okay. Yeah. And he doesn't have to talk about his injury and what they're going to do moving forward. That's his personal choice, but he needs to address the media. There's no question. 100%.
But what if he's in treatment, or what if he's just had the procedure and he's unavailable? You're not
bring him in on a gurney, Riv.
If he has had a procedure the day before he needs to do his clean out talk, then I can understand it.
Okay.
But if he doesn't, he should be there.
Well, then if he had the procedure or something, Dregs, then you say, Jack Eichel will be available in 10 days to speak to the media, or whenever the soonest available. Exactly. He has to talk to the media. Yeah. And
at some point, you're right. He has to, you know, just as a leader, let alone the captain of the Buffalo Sabres, he's got to address the media at some point. And maybe we're getting caught up here in semantics. I just don't know that it's going to be a locker cleanout day.
Man, it makes it like it. Like these are so interesting. I just don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that I ever would have even been considered a captain, but man, with all this responsibility, I don't know that I would want it. I wouldn't want to address anybody after this season.
Yeah.
You know, especially if I was hurt with a neck injury.
Yeah.
That's a, well, you know, like,
listen, I'm going to tell you
right
now,
we downplay the responsibility. You know, it's not just putting a letter on your shirt. It's like, now you got to answer for
everything. I've always
said
this, Petey. I've always said this. I'm going to tell you right now, you may not like this, but this is the way it is. The leaders on this team, okay, they will address when things are bad. That's when your leaders come out. That's when you need your leaders to come out. Not when things are going well. Everybody's going to pat all the leaders on the back. No, everybody can reap the benefits of a team playing well collectively together. But when things are not going well, who do you rely on?
Yeah.
Who does the team rely on? The players, everyone, you rely on your leadership. Your leadership on a tough season, it's another tough season. Doesn't matter. Got to address it.
See, Drakes, you know what I did there? I don't truly believe what I was saying. I just knew that I could get that out of Craig, and that's what this is all about.
That's
making everyone around me,
looking for.
Making Listen, everyone around me
I've
better.
Never been in a situation that Jack has been in. He has dealt with some really tough years, and he is a world-class hockey player, one of the best players in the world. There's no question about it. But he is the leader of this hockey team. He has to address it, whether he likes it or not. He has to put that time in to do what he has to do.
Darren Dreger joining us here as he always does Friday, but now at 11 o'clock. And, you know, one thing I think we want to know, that'll be, no roll on from Sabres on that, because I'm curious to know what's going to happen with the Canadian division and where they're going to play when it comes time for them to cross over. Is there any final decision leaning toward or closing in on something that could be solidified?
Not yet. But that's not to say that they're not angling towards that. The NHL just doesn't feel like there's a heightened sense of urgency, even though the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs are looming. You know, in a perfect world, they'd get some sort of direction from the Canadian government that says, look, we're going to give you an exemption so that you can cross the border, provided that the COVID-19 numbers are coming back, the vaccination numbers are going up, all those things. That would be best case scenario. But the more likely scenario is one that we've talked about on the show before, and that's the North Division champ almost adopting a U.S. sister city, right? And then they move into that American city, and that becomes their home for the conference final and potentially the Stanley Cup final as well. So we could see that happen. That's more likely than the Canadian government surprising all of us here in Canada and opening the borders to the U.S.
Are ticket sales going to be a big driven force behind that, like to look for a venue, or is it location? But you know that if they win the semifinal, then do you have to change the location for the finals? Like, how does that work?
I mean, it's a good question, Marty. It's going to depend on circumstance at that point. I think Steve Hatzepetros, who's the schedule maker for the NHL, continues to look at a variety of different options. Now, he's not the guy that picks the locations for the sites, et cetera. But I'm sure that within that group, with Bill Daly and Commissioner Bettman and Colin Campbell and all of those hockey operations people, they've had a variety of conversations. And it's going to be a geographic decision, right? It depends on who comes out of the North. You have the Toronto Maple Leafs come out of the North. Maybe Buffalo's a nice spot for the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? You know, if it's the Edmonton Oilers, a team closer to the West, you know, maybe the Chicago, the arena in Chicago becomes, you know, a more likely venue. They're not there yet. And every time I ask Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly about what these things are going to look like, effectively the message I get, ask me in a week and maybe I'll have a better idea. They just, honestly, I don't think the NHL gets enough credit for how they've had to bob and weave through this entire pandemic, right? Yeah. So what they've learned in this process is you don't do anything knee-jerk. You know, the Vancouver experience was our most recent example. The Canucks weren't even close to being able to play when the NHL wanted them to return to play. Well, you know, the medical experts talked to the Vancouver experts and they delay their start. You know, it wasn't perfect, but they had to make that decision. I think they've learned step by step that there's no sense rushing into anything.
Have the Sabres been interviewing coaches? And because I'm just reading here, I reminded me I wanted to crush Riv's dream and let him know that Brindamore will probably not be available. But have the Sabres been interviewing?
He hasn't signed yet, Petey.
No, he hasn't signed yet. Even though, and look, I reported this on Insider Trading yesterday, and I was careful in how I chose my words. The Carolina Hurricanes management are optimistic that they're going to get Rod Brindamore signed before the start of the playoffs, so within a week. Is Rod Brindamore as optimistic that that's going to get done? I'm not so sure about that. But Tom Dundon, the owner, has gone on record as he, you know, paraphrasing, he doesn't even want to own the team if Rod Brindamore isn't coaching, which is pretty dramatic. All right, well, then put the money on the table, put the term on the table, and get this deal done. Petey, as far as Kevin Adams and Jason Karmanos and the group interviewing coaches, I don't know that they're at that place yet, but it's coming real soon, right? You wait until the end of the regular season, and then you start reaching out for permission to speak with the team or the coaches that are working with current NHL clubs, or at least are aligned by contract with other NHL clubs. I got to believe that process is going to be expedited here in the very near future. And what I know is Don Granato is considered to be a top candidate, as you guys would expect, as Kevin Adams would acknowledge. But you got to go through the process. With all due respect to Donnie, you have to go through the process. Like, here's, you know, look, I mentioned Rick Tocchet. I put Rick Tocchet at the same level as Rod Brindamore. I don't know if you guys agree or not. You know, that's just me looking at the body of the work here. I get the sense that Brindamore is going to test the free agent market. Does it make more sense to him to push away from another renovation project in Arizona to jump to another renovation project, which appears to be in Buffalo? Probably not. Well, when guys like that are available, then the market opens up. And you look at Columbus, and you look at all the teams that you can put a question mark beside coaching.
There's a lot in there, Drakes. Thank you for that. And I just one thing I took from that is you almost hope that Brendan Moore wants to sign with Carolina, because why would you create that spotlight rolling into the playoffs, into the next round? And where is this contract? I thought you were going to sign.
Hold on, that's on ownership. And that, well, it's on ownership. It's not on management. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's on Brendan Moore. That's what I'm saying. Why make?
I don't understand why you would ever in a million years announce that the head coach is getting a contract before you start your playoffs. I mean, why are they not keeping this, you know, locked and sealed? And let's go do our job.
The deal's already done, and he's just really excited to indicate that the deal's done, but doesn't want to because they want it to be like the lead into the playoffs. But if they don't sign and they move on, I mean, couldn't it become a distraction?
Well, either way, it's a distraction. Yeah. Either way, do you think that Rod Brind'Amour is losing any sleep over whether he has a contract extension or not? Zero.
No, whatsoever.
He's motivated.
At the top of the list of any other team, so he doesn't lose any sleep on
is
that.
Is he not in the driver's seat? Is he not Lewis Hamilton, pardon the F1?
He is, but you know what? It's like you guys as players probably, well, Petey, maybe not you, had to take a hometown discount.
Yeah, no. No. If I was playing in my hometown, I'd still be making league minimum. I couldn't make less.
Yeah. So sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. And I think that it's unfair to suggest that Brendan Moore should have to. I'm not suggesting that for a moment, but we know that the Carolina Hurricanes are a budget team. They're not paying Rod Brendan Moore what he's worth. What he's worth is $4 million plus when you look at top coaches in the league, and he's not going to get that from the Carolina Hurricanes. But the only way you get it elsewhere is by going to the market and saying, I'm willing to coach somewhere else. I'm willing to uproot my family and live somewhere else. And I feel like Brendan Moore is deeply entrenched in Carolina, in the community.
I wonder what kind of pressure he's getting from other coaches too to just kind of bump that number up. And
who is the highest paid coach in the league? Is that Quenneville in Florida?
No, well, it would be coaching. Mike Babcock.
Yeah.
University of Saskatchewan, Mike Babcock, highest paid NHL coach. Without question. Drakes, we're way over time with you. Can't thank you enough for the extended time and all the information today.